Wednesday, February the 3rd, for so full I felt at the end of the day, like a jug into which rich wine was being poured, until it was full to the top and overflowing and simply couldn't take any more. The day began with Mr. and Mrs. Lawrence Rockefeller coming for coffee about 11. I had wanted just to talk with him on an informal way. Why did he put so much of his life and brains and money into beautification and recreation? It turned out to be 2.5 of the most interesting hours I'll ever spend. Although getting on the subject of beautification is like picking up a tangled skein of wool. All the threads are interwoven. Recreation and urban renewal and mental health and the crime rate and rapid transit and highway beautification and the war on poverty and parks, national, state, and local. It's awfully hard to hitch the conversation into one straight line because everything leads to something else. An extraordinary family, the Rockefellers. Those brothers with their very considerable money and brains and devotion directed into their different fields. Mr. Lawrence Rockefeller is going to be the chairman of the National Conference on Beauty, which Lyndon is calling for mid-May. There are a lot of us desperately interested in something besides a lot of words and proliferation of committees coming out of it. I do think now is the time. What is that quote about nothing is so strong as an idea that has met its day? I interspersed a trip to the beauty parlor. And then about 4 o'clock, there was a shift of gears to the war on poverty. Sergeant Shriver had asked me if I would invite to tea the advisory council of the war on poverty. We wound up about 30 of us with tea and cocktails in the blue room. As soon as everybody was there, the members of the advisory council and the 5 cabinet members whose work is particularly related to the war on poverty, Tony Celebrezzi of HEW, Orville Freeman of Agriculture, Nick Katzenbach, the Attorney General, Hugh Udall of Interior, Bill Wirtz of Labor, Margie McNamara, whose husband is deeply concerned with it and who is herself a member of the advisory council, and some agency heads who work with it, such as General Hershey of Selective Service, who's been around here about as long as I have, and Robert Weaver of the Housing Department. As soon as they were all there, I welcomed them, told them I really wanted this to turn into a seminar so that they could tell me what they'd been doing and what they planned to do, turned the meeting over to Sarge, and we adjourned the Red Room, and we'd brought in a few extra chairs. Nearly all of the 30 of us sat around in a cozy circle, the chief nuggets of information being deftly extracted by Shriver, who tactfully and skillfully tossed the conversational ball around to this blue ribbon group. One of the best spokesmen was Dr. Otis Singletary, whom I had last seen on the whistle stop trip when I stopped at a North Carolina college town, Greensboro, I believe. He was president of the college and had introduced me on the platform to a gathering of the students. He's director of the Job Corps and says that applications are coming in about 6,000 a day. Describing the young men who come to it, he cited one who, when he got off the bus at the Catoctin, Maryland Job Corps Center, he said, "Where are the fences?" He had thought it just must be some kind of corrective institution. One, when asked why had he come, said quite candidly, "Because this is my last chance." Dr. Singletary said, "So many of these kids have a sense of overwhelming defeat. He's a singularly capable man, and I feel good that the program's got him." On the advisory council were men of such stature as Ken Galbraith, who said he was there to listen to Sarge Shriver and me conduct a seminar, A. Philip Randolph from Labor, and Archbishop Lucy, long experienced in dealing with the poor of this world. I remember his work with the Mexicans goes back to the first days of Roosevelt and Maury Maverick. One of the best stories was told by Tony Celebrezzi. It was an answer to the oft-repeated and rather cynical question, how will we know whether it will work? His answer was that years ago in a slum area of Cleveland, Ohio, a schoolteacher gathered up in the streets boys from poverty-stricken homes who were wandering loose, just waiting to get into trouble. He said, "Let's have a club." They played basketball, discussed civic issues, held debates. Since the teacher was a Republican, it was named the Theodore Roosevelt Club. In the years since then, one of the men has become a judge, 3 are lawyers, 1's an architect, 1 a doctor, 1 dentist, 2 CPAs, and 1 was the mayor of Cleveland and now sits in the president's cabinet. It was a dramatic story. You had only to look at Mr. Celebrezzi to know he lived it. It was a rich, exciting 2 hours of talk. I just wish we had one pool reporter present. Although later, Liz wrestled with her irate sisters, trying to give them the information. Muriel Humphrey was there, sitting quietly and listening, as he filed out, "Sarge asked me if I would reconsider and sponsor the program Head Start, an honorary chairmanship not supposed to lead to work. He is indeed one of the best salesmen I ever saw." And next was Mary Lasker, who talked with me about the beautification program and the Friday Women's Doers Luncheon. She was full of excitement. She says this is the first time any leader of a nation has used the word beauty in a national address. First time one has called the beautification of the whole country as a part of his program. Napoleon III decided to beautify Paris. Other European monarchs have talked of beautifying their capital cities. But nobody has ever called for a nationwide beautification program. She showed me the pictures of her gift to the city of New York, the tulips and jonquils, along 20 blocks of them. They had come about only after 10 years of making gifts of planting to the city. But she has a long record of experience.